we can really get started.
Let's just take my nap time.
I don't know which one.
All of them.
You're supposed to be Miss Tom. I keep trying to call you Bill.
Coming on in and settling down, I'll get a little housekeeping out of the way. I'm an alcoholic. Let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and will no difference. Amen. I've asked Joe from Simpsonville to bring a little rain step.
I'm going to read the steps from one of the original copies of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Jimmy says if you're real good, he'll let you look at it from a distance when you get through. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, bring wonderful knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you, God.
Thank you, Joe. Now, I've heard the anonymity statement before, so I'm not going to read it. I am going to read something, though, and I believe a lot of times the oldest is the best. This is the first pamphlet that AA published, and this was written long before we had a preamble or a preface. And I'm going to read this out of this pamphlet. It was originally published in 1941. Alcoholics Anonymous. The purpose of this booklet was to show how thousands of us who were once hopeless alcoholics have recovered from a malady. We have found a way of life which no longer compels us to drink. Alcoholics Anonymous is the great reality that has expelled our obsession. Banded together in groups, or sometimes working alone, we aim to help fellow drinkers recover their health. Now, being the former, we offer our experience only to those who want it. There are no dues. AA is an avocation. Each member squares his debt of gratitude by helping other alcoholics to recover. In doing so, he maintains his own sobriety. Growing rapidly, we number thousands of ex-drinkers who are now to be found in hundreds of American and Canadian communities. Our first member recovered in 1934. We believe that two-thirds of us who have laid a foundation for permanent sobriety, as more than half who have had no relapses at all, despite the fact that many of us were considered incurable. This approach to alcoholism is based on our own drinking experience, what we have learned from medicine and psychiatry, and upon spiritual principles common to all creeds. By combining these resources, the recovery rate among alcoholics who want to stop has been greatly increased. We think of alcoholism as an illness, an obsession of the mind coupled with an allergy of the body. It is a shattering sickness, physical, emotional, and spiritual. How to expel the obsession that compels us to drink against our will is the problem of every alcoholic. The only requirement for AA membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. We feel that each man's religious views, if any, are his own affair. Whatever shade of opinion is found among us, we take no position as a group upon controversial questions. No particular point of view is demanded of anyone. Our sole aim is to show sick alcoholics who want to get well how they may do so. That's just about two-thirds of that space, but I think that's... Well, I just happen to like some of the old stuff there. This is my first experience in chairing a meeting with old-timers, and this is the first old-timers meeting we've had at the Tar Heel Midland Conference. And so I didn't ask any real directions that much, because I knew if I'd asked some people, they'd have told me what to do, and I probably wouldn't have done it that way, so I just didn't ask. So I must have been given a carte blanche to do what I want to, because I wasn't told what to do. I was given great latitude in choosing the speakers. The only requirement was that they have 30 years of sobriety. And that doesn't qualify me as being an old-timer. I still count my sobriety in days. I've only been sober 10,239 days. Maybe I'll make it to the old-timer one of these days. But in thinking about how to choose some of these people, I thought I'd try to get a broad spectrum. Thought I'd get the oldest and the ugliest and the prettiest. Now I'm going to leave it up to y'all to decide who is who and what is what. But I thought it would be good if we could prevail upon our panelists to talk 10, 12, 15 minutes apiece about how AA was when they came in, the changes they've seen, and about anything and any of the old stories that they remember might want to relate to us for the good of the fellowship. Might want to make some of the changes, which may or may not have been so good. And I thought I would start off with Bill, and then Jackie, and then Tom. And then we should have a little bit of time, if they don't get long-winded, for questions from the floor. And I'm sure that with this great wealth of knowledge and all this sobriety, incidentally, the combined sobriety of these three people is 112 years. Jackie came in when she was nine. they didn't ask me to talk. So I want to introduce to you Bill D. from Franklin, North Carolina, by way of New Jersey.
Thank you, Jimmy. I'm a drunk. My name is Bill Duncan. And I have not had a drink or a chemical substitute since I came out of the Alcoholic Board of Knickerbocker Hospital in New York on May 29th, 1953. Go ahead and applaud because you're applauding yourselves and the higher power. I have nothing to do with it. In fact, I'm here under false pretenses, you might say, because I only have one day of sobriety. And I want you all to remember that. I have had over 38 years. I have one day. And that's all I have. What we have, read it in the book, is a daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual condition. That's pretty good today. You know, it amazes me when I realize that the other day, I was thinking about this, you know, I something very important happened in my life about 2 years ago, and I just realized it last May. And it's expecting all of a sudden. It was around the time of my anniversary, and I was riding along the car one day, and I said, oh my God, I have spent over half my entire life as a sober member of AA. And that from a guy who couldn't go 6 hours without a drink when he got here. I got here, I was addicted to alcohol. I'd like to tell you a little about how it was when I got here. I arrived at my first meeting, well fortified and trembling with fear inside. There was one thing I was afraid of, that you were going to stop me from drinking. That was the one thing I was terrified of, because at that point I was addicted to alcohol. And thank God, somebody at that meeting said, there are no musts in AA. Wow! The mind went to work. What was left of the mind went to work. And it said, I believe these people are telling the truth up here. If what he said is true, then that means I can go on drinking and be a member of AA. I became one of your drinking members. And I've always carried a very strong grief for the drinking members of AA. Because if it hadn't been for that, I wouldn't be here. I couldn't come sober. I couldn't stay sober 24 hours, as I said. I couldn't go 6 hours without a drink at that point. And so I used to come to the meetings. Now, these were all open speaker meetings. We had very few discussion meetings in those days in Jersey, and I never got to one. I didn't even know they existed at that point, I don't think. I barely made the local speaker meeting. There were only 4 meetings in the county at that point. And I used to make some of them. And I would sit there and breathe on you. And if you sat next to me all through a meeting, that counted as a slip for you. it was wonderful because nobody ever called me a phony. Nobody ever told me I had to stop drinking. All they would do, they would ask me, how are you doing? And I would say, not so hot. See, I'd been a little bit honest. People could stand 10 feet away and tell how I was doing. They were kind enough to ask me. And the other thing was, this was the only place I was welcome. I was persona non grata practically everywhere else. I mean, the word was out, Duncan is a nice guy, but, you know what that but entails. And so, I came here because it was the one place I was welcome. They actually seemed to want me, even though I was drunk. And I kept coming, and I realized it didn't make any, and I didn't have to lie about my drinking here. That was another beautiful thing. It was the only place I didn't have to, I've been lying about it everywhere else, and of course, you know, how far we get with that. The only person I've been fooling has been myself. But thank God, they kept me coming back, and I kept coming long enough to realize that the people I was listening to had something I wanted very badly. As a matter of fact, I used to think that I drank to get it. They were relaxed, they were happy, and they enjoyed life, and they laughed a lot. And I used to think that I could get that by drinking more. By the time I got to AA, no matter how much I drank, I couldn't quite get even, let alone feel good, you know. From the time I woke up in the morning, which was a disaster, I spent the whole day drinking, trying to get even, and couldn't do it. I had to keep alcohol in my system just to function. And I don't know of any way you're more miserable existence than that, when you have to drink in order to survive. And so I finally reached a decision, and I was terrified of stopping, but I made one abortive attempt, and that was a disaster. And then I finally went and tried to see how long can you actually go without a drink, and I couldn't quite make 6 hours, and I called my sponsor, and the guy who became my sponsor, and told him, and he took me over to Knickerbocker Hospital in New York, because he thought I'd get a better break there than St. Michael's in Newark. There were, at that time, 3 hospitals in the metropolitan area that would admit alcoholics. There were 3 beds in St. Michael's, 3 in St. John's in Brooklyn, and about 18 at Knickerbocker. And he figured I'd get better AA at Knickerbocker, so he took me all the way over there, even though we were much closer to Newark. And I spent 5 days in there, and at the end of those 5 days, I came out able to go 24 hours and eat and sleep without taking any kind of a chemical to do it. That was the old Silkworth treatment. He was dead by then, but they had a wonderful nurse in there called Teddy Rowan who had worked with him. And she was an inspiration, and the other patients were an inspiration, and the AA same others who came in and visited were an inspiration. My sponsor was. He came over and visited me once while I was there, and then he came and picked me up. And he took me home. And I got home about 6:30 that night. That was a Friday night. And as I walked in the door, I was living in a Cape Cod house, and you walked right into the living room. And I walked in, and my wife was sitting there on the sofa, and I opened the door. I didn't say hello. I didn't get a chance to say a word. She said, "I want you to understand one thing." I froze, and she said, "If you ever take another drink." And then there was a long litany of how she was going to take the kids and leave, and that was going to be it, and that would be final, and if I ever took another drink. And I stood there, and I'd learned a little about this program and a little about honesty in the few days I'd been in Knickerbocker and the time I'd been attending AA meetings drunk. And I said, "Honey, I'm sorry, but I can't promise you that. All I can promise you is that I'm not going to take a drink today." It was about 6:30 in the evening. We had just spent $85, which we didn't have, for me to go to Knickerbocker. And this is what I came up with. And if looks could kill, I would not be here talking to you. That went over like a lead balloon. The funny thing is, that's the only promise I ever made to my wife, and I haven't had a drink since. And by the way, I can tell any of you out there who are interested in becoming an old-timer, I can tell you how to do it in 5 words. Don't drink and don't die. And what happened to me in AA, it's a little like what happened to my friend Clancy. And you may have heard some years ago they had a terrific explosion at South Amboy in New Jersey. A munition plant, or a munition ship, I think, in the harbor blew up. Anyway, blew up about half the town. I mean, there were things raining all over. And I happened to be driving into South Amboy at the time this thing went off. And there was this terrible, I pulled over to the side, I heard this terrible explosion, and then all of a sudden the sky got dark and it started raining boards and debris of various kinds. And I just sat there waiting for things to come down, and after things had slowed down a little, I saw my friend Clancy, and he was running down the street, yelling and waving his fists, and as he came near, I saw he had something in his right hand. And I got out of the car and I stopped, and I said, Clancy, what's the matter? And he said, "Oh, let me at the dirty merchant bugs, I kill him, I'll tear him limb from limb." And I looked at him, and you know what, he's got a weapon. All he has in his hand is a doorknob. I said, "Clancy, what's the matter? What happened? What did they do?" He said, "What happened? What did they do? I'll tell you what they did. They blew a saloon right out of my hand." And in a very nice, first things first, one day at a time, easy does it kind of way, that's what you guys get to do. I followed the victim, which you get from all good sponsors, "Don't drink and go to meetings." I would complain to my sponsor. Anything I complained about, I got told, "Don't drink and go to meetings." And I practiced this diligently. And I stayed dry through some miracle. Just doing that kept me dry for a while and working with other alcoholics. And then I discovered that there was a lot more to this program than just not drinking. But if I wanted to recover, I was going to have to change. I was going to have to live a new and completely different way of life, something totally different from anything I'd ever experienced before or during my drinking. I discovered that we had a program, we had 12 steps, which were our program of recovery. I've read them many times in the book, but it never occurred to me to apply these to me. And I started doing it. And some wonderful things began to happen to me. And over the years, it got better because, you see, this is one of those things that you don't learn these things overnight. You don't learn them 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 years. This is a lifetime job. I'm still working on it because the type of life I'm trying to live today is so totally different from anything I'd known during my formative years. And what happens if you stick around for a while and start trying to practice these steps is that you get things in your life that you never dreamed you'd have. Now, I have a very dear friend. He's a dear friend to a lot of people. He's out on the West Coast. In the course of my AA history, I had a job where I traveled all over the country, and I've been to AA meetings from Anchorage, Alaska to Miami Beach, and from Lewiston, Maine to San Diego, and in between. And this guy happens to be in the south of California, he's in Southern California, and everybody there loves him. He's in the program for about 45 years, and somebody asked him one day, and next 7 meetings a week. And somebody has said, Bob, you've been in the program all this time, and you're still going to 7 meetings a week. Do you really need that money? And he said, oh no. He said, I stopped and figured it out one time. He said, and actually all I need, the only meetings I need 2 meetings a week. That I would have, but I don't need 7 a week, no. And I said, well, then how come you're still going to 7? Bob said, well, I can't figure out which 2 they are. I like that kind of thinking. I like that kind of thinking. I like the kind of thinking that another friend of mine taught me in AA. You know, when I refer to our drinking numbers, I do not do this disparagingly. I do this in the belief that maybe, just maybe, they're the only real numbers we have, are our drinking numbers. If you will read the third tradition, literally, it says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I don't qualify. I've stopped drinking. I don't have any desire to stop. I have a desire to stay sober. But I don't have any desire to stop. It's the poor sucker who's sitting out there and coming to meetings drunk like I did and suffering and really wanting to want to get sober, but he can't quite make it. That's the real number. The guy who wants to stop drinking but hasn't been able to do it yet. Think about it. I think of them as my blood brothers when I see them. I love our drinking numbers, and I try to encourage them to come to meetings the way I was encouraged, because you never know what can happen. Anyway, the years went by, and here I am today, and somebody wanted to know why I'm going to as many meetings as I'm going to. I had to tell them why. I discovered when I got sober in the beginning, I was Mr. Eager Beaver. I wanted to sober up everybody else. I worked with newcomers like you wouldn't believe, and I had an overwhelming lack of success. Everybody I worked with either kept on drinking or went out and got drunk after a short period of dryness. But I knew where to go to get the answer, and I went to my sponsor. He was very successful with all the tough cases and everything, especially hard cases like me. And I said, Tom, what's the secret of your success with alcoholics? And he shook his head and looked at me very sadly and said, Bill, I hate to tell you this, but I've yet to get one alcoholic sober and I've yet to keep one alcoholic sober. I thought, him and his false modesty. You know, that was how I had a very tolerant mind in those days. But I watched what he did, and I tried to do what he was doing. I did it on the struggle. I went through the motions. I was not able to live these steps. I hadn't even discovered them yet. And he was living this program. That's why he was able to help other people, and I wasn't. But he always had new people at meetings, so I always had new people at meetings. I kept bringing new people to meetings. And as I did this, I saw that I've been doing this for years and years and years, and I have yet to get one alcoholic sober, and I have yet to keep one alcoholic sober. But what I have seen over the years is a power greater than all of us put together, working through our examples as drinking and sober alcoholics, healing people who have an incurable progressive fatal disease, alcoholism. And that healing is taking place in every one of these meetings you go to. You don't see it. It's not dramatic. You don't see it. A new man coming to the door and an old member lays hands on him and he gets well. It doesn't work that way. You have to come back next week, next month, next year. Sometimes one guy in Trent, it was 11 years. But, you know, you keep coming back and you see these things happen. And then when you realize that maybe in a very small way, just by sitting there in the audience, you become a part of this beautiful healing process that's going on. There's no way that you can get tired of going to meetings. I don't care how long you're in, how many meetings you go to, how many speakers you hear. You will never get tired. And I'd like to leave you with one more thought, which again I picked up from this program. A young Native American was speaking in our group one time many years ago, and I've still carried this with me. And I want to leave this with you because it's helped me so much, and I think it may help somebody here. He said, my people have a saying, as long as you keep walking toward the light, all your shadows are behind you. As long as you keep walking toward the light, all your shadows are behind you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. It's my pleasure now to introduce Jackie, whom I've known for a few 24 hours. More than a few. A long time. And it has been a very pleasant experience for me to know this true lady who walks and talks the program, who is the epitome of a successful AA member. I give you Jackie.
Hi. Hi, everybody. My name is Jackie Jolly, and I am an alcoholic. My dry date is December the 29th, 1957, and so that does make me an old timer. In a way, I sort of feel like that I kind of snuck in on this up here because I've always been one that lied about my age. But I don't lie about the length of my sobriety. I made notes because I really am an old timer, and before I got to be an old timer, I couldn't remember too well. But there were a lot of things that I wanted to mention about AA and the way it was when I came into AA. And when I say I came into AA, that's not exactly right, because it's like they came and got me. That is really cool. That is really like some of the folks came out and got me. It was sort of getting around about my drinking and among some people that I knew real well and that I associated with in different areas of my life. And the problems that I caused in my own family life. So they all decided that my husband really didn't know what he was doing with me in trying to help me. So it's really true that two AA members went to see my husband first to tip him off about me. And eventually, that whole thing, the way it worked out, was I came into AA with them. They went in to see him when he was in his place of business and told him that he was just handling things wrong, that I was just maneuvering and manipulating, and that I was not going to quit drinking as long as I was able to do that. He said, well, she's a real nice girl, and after she's been in the hospital about 24 hours and all the liquor's out of her, she's back just like you all over again. And they said, yeah, but there's something that goes on in between. And so they began to explain to him about this disease of alcoholism and about alcoholics like me, and he began to listen. So I really feel like, in a way, they came out and got me, and I'm awfully grateful for that. I was hard to get to. I didn't want to be an alcoholic, and I didn't want to come in to AA. But when I did finally come in, what I found was absolutely remarkable. From there to here, where I am today, has really been an adventure. Each day, one day at a time, an adventure. When I walked into that meeting that first night, I found about, as well as I can remember, about 17 or 18 people, and it was called an open meeting, and the group was the Budley Group in Raleigh, which, as I have researched it now, was either the fourth or fifth group in Raleigh, whichever way you want to count them. The first group was the downtown group. The second group was the fellowship group at Christ Church. The third group was the Hayes Barton group. An offshoot from that and other groups was a group called the St. Mary Street group. Some people called it the Hoi Choi group. It met up over a Chinese restaurant on St. Mary Street. And it did not last very long because the rent was too high. So that's why I'm saying the next group was the Budley group. So you count it in there as either number four or number five. The group was between 1 and 2 years old when I finally started into the door that night. They had about four people or five people that had started the group, and they had one man that they considered their first pigeon that they were trying to maneuver into complete sobriety at all times. And then along like this. That first night, there was a man talked, and I'm going to mention some names since this meeting is in Raleigh. His name was John Boo. He was a short, gray-haired man, and a very distinctive man, nice-looking man, made a nice talk. I don't remember all he said, but I do know that part of his subject was fear. He talked about being afraid to get up in the morning, afraid to go to bed at night, afraid to cross the street because he was afraid he couldn't get back, afraid to live and afraid to die. I heard every word of that and remembered it because he was talking about what I had, and that was fear. I continued to go to this group. The sort of backbone of the group and the mainstay of the group was a fellow named P.B. And he had gotten sober by going to the first AA group in Raleigh, the downtown group, when it was having its meetings in order to start AA. He was there. He told me before he died, and later his wife told me, that that meeting in order to start AA was listed in the paper, and he read it. He said, I'm going to go to that thing. And she said it meant at the courthouse. And that he did not drink that day because he wanted to go. And that he was so nervous he walked because he was afraid he couldn't drive the car. And that meeting was the meeting that started AA in Raleigh, which I understand was in 1946. That man was kind of the backbone and the mainstay of this buddy group when I went into the buddy group. And the lady that helped me and was my sponsor in the group was a lady that I had already known and was in the same booze club with for many years. And I knew she had a drinking problem, but I thought she'd solved it because I'd seen her with a vice in her hand since then. So I thought she'd learned to drink, so I really didn't learn from her. I think I'd like to add here now this lady that brought me into AA and sponsored me in the beginning is still sober today. She has 37 years of sobriety. She's working on that 38th year, which will come up in May. And it's nice to know that she's still there and still sober and that the program works. So this was the start of this group that I came into that was, let's say, between 1 and 2 years of age, new in AA, and listening to what they said. At first, I didn't want to be whatever it was that they were talking about, an alcoholic. But as they were good to me and loved me and accepted me, gave me that love, you know, we talk about so much in AA, where nothing is expected in return, where they just, like you people do, you just love us regardless of whatever and don't expect us to do anything back to pay for that love that you give. That is what I first began to feel. And that's what made me want to be a part of that group and a part of those people and therefore an alcoholic and to feel. Now, this group was small, and back in those days, there was an awful lot of 12-step work to be done. We didn't have hospitals sending them in and drugs and guiding sponsors ahead of time. We just had to go out there and talk to them when they called and listen to them and try to convince them to come and go with us and tell them a little bit about what our life was like, to try to enchant them into coming to those meetings. And so when I went into the group, they took me in a way they went from one side of town to the other, and to Garner, and to Kelly, and to all around, every time somebody would call and we would get a hold of them, sometimes some of these people ahead of me would call the people, you know. And so they wanted to come out and see me. We were a bunch of evil beavers. And this was good. It helped me a lot, because every time they'd drag me around and I'd see these other people, I knew I wanted to be like these new people in this group and not back drooping like those people we were going to see. I think the 12-step work was one of the most beneficiary things to me in the beginning. I think, too, they also took me out to Dorothea Ditch, which is the mental hospital here in Raleigh. And we began to carry the program of AA out there. That was helpful, too. And they also didn't want to be locked up in there. They told me that when we got ready to go out somewhere to see these people and talk to these people, for me to get dressed, comb my hair, and fix my face up, and put on clean clothes, because we were going out there as AA members, and we were supposed to look right, we weren't supposed to be crazy, we were supposed to make sense, and look as good as we could. And I've never forgotten that. That's where they brought me along. They're the people that told me, don't take yourself too seriously, Jackie. And I will always be grateful for that. I think I have learned that lesson fairly well. By telling me that, every time I opened my mouth, in such a serious, I was so serious about everything, you know. They taught me to laugh at myself. One of the things that's been the greatest for me to have in my sobriety. I remember some of the closed meetings that we had, and I remember some of the subjects that we talked about, and sometimes we still talk about those subjects now in AA groups. They talked about what are the things that you've done today that you feel like has helped you stay sober today, and how does that compare to where it used to be and what you did during the day when you were drinking. I remember they talked about the steps somewhat. I don't remember that we had a discussion of the steps. I remember one fellow that talked a lot about the second step, and he suggested that if we didn't want to be restored to sanity, because that meant that we were insane, that we might decide to want to say, restored me to sane thinking. I remember learning that in the beginning in that group. And I remember somebody else telling me that they'd never been able to get anywhere with anything until they were willing and able to turn it loose in talking about the third step. I remember seeing the first 12 and 12 book that I ever got my hands on in that group, and I was absolutely fascinated with it, and I couldn't wait to take those steps and get them all done and get them behind me. I started immediately on so I could finish those things off. I remember this fellow PB, who was kind of the backbone of the group, using the big book to set up his discussions when he was the chairperson. I do remember that. I also remember, because the group was small, we met in an old beat-up kindergarten building that belonged to the Episcopal Church over on Canterbury Road in Marlin. The heat was not too good. The air conditioning was non-existent in the summertime. They had a little kitchen back there, and they ran in the daytime a small kindergarten there. The first job they gave me in the group was to wash the cups. The cups were made out of some kind of glass. Maybe some of you all remember they were kind of a pale green color glass. You remember when you bought cups made out of that stuff and bowls made out of it and everything? Well, that was before we had these cups like we have now. And so we had our own soap and dish pan in the kitchen, and it was my job to wash the cups. And they would send the rejects back to me if any of them had lipstick on them. they came back, and I was supposed to put them back in the soap suds and do another thing. And I never thought about not doing that. I just did just what they said, and I assumed that I would be doing this for the rest of my life. And since I had decided that I wanted what they had, it was perfectly okay with me, and they'd send the rejects back, and I would wash the lipstick and stuff off, and I'd say, but you know, sometimes it's just a little bit of it. I didn't see why you don't just go on and dry it. And they said, well, you know, so-and-so might come, and she's there, she criticizes. That was somebody's wife. We've got to have all this done right, so they don't think that we're slobs now that we're sober. So that was my first job, and it did me a lot of good. Another thing I remember about the booth is that we didn't get to go home at 9 or 10 o'clock. And so we would take the coffee and pour it into a little bucket or a container and take it over to somebody's house and keep the meeting going until 12 o'clock at night, still talking. That was a lot of fun, too. I also remember in that group they did things like learn to dance again over at somebody's house when we took that coffee over there. Because one of the members said, well, I'll never be able to go back and do the things that I used to do now that I don't work anymore. And somebody said, what was it that you used to do? And he said, well, I used to dance. But, I mean, I don't have nerve enough to ask anybody now, and I'm not, probably can't. And they said, somebody turn on the music. And somebody had him up and was teaching him to dance all over again. And you just learn all kind of things in AA on the sideline that you don't know you're going to know. But what was left of that coffee would be the center of continuing the meeting together, because we didn't want to give up being together at 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. I do want to say one or two things that might not have been just exactly right in the beginning of my coming to AA and what it was like, but I think Jim would say that we could say a little bit about what the changes were. The few years went by and I met people at different more groups, and the groups began to grow and all. And one of the men in Raleigh wanted some of us to go out, and I can't remember to save my life where it was, but it was somewhere way out in the country. And J.C. and I got hooked into going out there to tell the people in this rural church what AA was really like and what AA would be like if it met in their church, and let those people see what we alcoholics who were sober really looked like. Now that was really an experience, and if you want to hear that in detail, you can ask Dave, but I will tell you this, they had refreshments, they had little tiny sandwiches and little tiny cookies, and they had tea, and we went around this pretty little tea table, you know, and all of us were laughing about being drunks and going around this little tea table, you know, and they called me Sister Jackie, and they called him Brother Dave. That was kind of back in the dark ages, but they saw what we looked like anyway. And how is AA today? AA is well and healthy and happy today and different. Going back and thinking about that group that I went into makes me feel good, because I know that when I went into AA, it was happy, and it was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, experience of my life, I'm sure. But when I think about AA today and its growth and the young people, in meetings all over everywhere, I can't help but say that I'm happy. And it's still here. It is still based on the same principles and the same steps. We still have sponsors, and we still love each other. And we freely give of this love, and we freely give of this program to the new person that comes in. I know we've had some ups and downs with the way people get here and some of the things they think they already know. But the way I look at AA today, it's well and happy, and it's there for the people that want it, that will be coming in. And I think I owe to the people
not only for my sobriety, I could never do enough to show how grateful I am for being sober today, but I owe to the new people who come into AA the same message, the same traditions, the same steps, without any changes, for them to base their life experiences and adventures on, and hope and pray that their adventures have been and are today as good as mine are. Thank you.
That was great, Jackie.
Thank you.
Our final speaker needs no real introduction, and I hesitate to say much about him. He has been known, if anybody makes any kind of remark about him, he has been known to have a quick comeback. He's got a lot of sobriety, a quick mind, and just a great fellow. He reminds me of my old irascible sponsor. My sponsor used to take me on 12-step calls. That's one. I'm going to digress a minute. My sponsor used to take me on 12-step calls with him, and this was before we had the treatment facilities, and this was before the first question was, do you have insurance?
Amen. Amen.
He would give me instructions when he and I were going to make a 12-step call. He said, we're going out here to see this man, and he's been drunk for a pretty good while, but his wife said he wants to talk to somebody, and I believe he does. He says, now I'm going to tell you exactly what you're to do. He said, now we're going out there, and you shut up and listen. And that's what I did. And I went out and made 12 with him and made 12-step calls. And I miss that to this day. I need a wet drunk every once in a while. I got to thinking about it the other day, about one of the things that he would do. He would look at the man and he'd say, you don't feel so good, do you? And the man would readily agree with him. And then he said, well, you ain't supposed to feel good. And then the next thing he'd say was, do you believe that there is a God? He wouldn't say, do you believe in God? He said, do you believe that there is a God? And I never heard one deny that there was a God. And that set the tone for our 12-step call. But anyway, I'm not up here to talk. It's my pleasure to give you Tom.
Thank you, Jimmy. I've never been so roundly insulted in my life. Other than in a bar room, probably. The ugly. My name is Tom Hampton, and I'm an alcoholic. And they say that if you don't have a dry date, maybe you don't belong in this outfit. Mine is February the 17th, 1952. And that's been a long time ago. And you can look at me and tell I've been somewhere a damn long time. Like Jackie, I had to make some notes. And I find that when I make notes, I invariably get away from them. And a lot of times I'm not able to get back to them. But if I don't, you ain't gonna miss nothing. I'm lonesome here today with all these people that are here because my wife's not here. She's sick and not able to come, and I miss her. Martha was the one that got me into AA. I didn't want any parts of this. I went to the first AA meeting that I can remember in 1947, and it was in cold weather. I don't know what the date was. I was drunk when I went. And there was a great big guy, 6'4", weighed about 250 pounds, and he didn't have an ounce of fat on him. And he got up to start the meeting, and he said, "My name's Roper, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's the first drink. It makes me drunk." I grabbed Martha by the arm. I said, "Let's get the hell out of here. If he can't take but one drink, he's in the right place." But it takes a whole lot more than that for me. I don't belong with these people. I went back maybe to two or three meetings, and being an adult and a man, I can handle this thing. And if you'll just let me alone until the first of the year, I'll show you that I can quit. And in 1948, I quit from January the 1st until December the 31st. You know, even us alcoholics, if we have a point to prove, we can prove it. We'll show them. But she sends her love, and so does Millie, to all of you here. And I started drinking again in 1949. And AA wasn't mentioned. Now, I wasn't rip-roaring drunk every day, but every day that I know of, I had something to drink. And maybe on weekends or the middle of the week or the first of the week, I'd get drunk. But I was in the home for the incompetents, post office department. And I could get by fairly well with it. Of course, by May or June, I didn't have any sick leave or annual leave or any leave at all. I used to have a little walk time without pay, but those were not too rough. And the day came when, again, I made the promise that I would quit. And I quit for 3 days, and I couldn't hack it anymore. My whole system needed alcohol. And I started drinking January the 3rd of 1952. And I can remember the last day that I drank. Now, I'm not going into that. Our big book tells us that in a general way we tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'm not going into any drunk log. But on that particular day, I went to work and I drank heavy. I came home and I seriously thought about committing suicide. And I was afraid it'd hurt. And I didn't want to get hurt. Do you know they say that there are a lot of coincidences that happen? I had talked to Martha about committing suicide. And I went upstairs and went to bed. And about 8 o'clock that night, I had gotten up and was trying to watch television with one eye to watch a basketball game, black and white. And it was just too much for me almost. And the telephone rang and Martha said, "It's for you." Well, the only people that ever called me was somebody that I owed. And I didn't want to talk to them, but I took the phone and man says, "I understand you're having some trouble with your drinking. And if if looks would have killed the person, she would have died then. But anyhow, I agreed to talk to him the next day. Martha had made the phone call to the Baltimore Intergroup, and the secretary had been up to the office to get some papers, and instead of letting the phone ring and the telephone answering service get it, Ed picked up the phone and talked to Martha. That saved my life. And I always understood that a coincidence like that that happens, or a circumstance like that's happened, is God's way of doing something for somebody and remaining anonymous. And what it's like now is the only good life that we have ever known. And this year we will be married 62 years. Poor girl didn't have any place to go. But she stuck it out with me, and I thank God for that. And you know, to try to cut a talk to 10 or 15, 20 minutes is just beyond me. But the things that have happened over the years that have been miraculous, really. I can remember some of the things that happened, but I'm not going to talk about me. In 1955 in Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, there were several thousand AAs listened to Bill talk and voted to accept the responsibility of running GSO and AA. And Bill threw his arms up in the air and said, "At last I can become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." And Bill couldn't become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous like you and I. Any meeting or anywhere that he would go, Bill was lionized. This is a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we never let him forget it. But he couldn't attend a meeting and sit down in the middle of an auditorium or a room and just be Bill W. But from that meeting, the torch was passed to us and given to us to protect it and keep its flame burning bright. And to see that the hand of AA was always there to help the still suffering alcoholic. And as I look out at all you young people that are out there and that are new in AA, and that are active in AA and love AA, it's to you that we old-timers. And I don't like the word old-timers. Hell, I can't do what I used to. I can still navigate a little. So we give it to you to love, protect, and cherish the same way that we have tried to do, and to still help the suffering alcoholic. We pass it on, and I hope and pray that all of you will do all in your power so as not to let any dishonor befall it. A word of direction to you, and I don't mean to preach. My group tells me that I'm too parental. You're dealing with adults. Yeah, I'm dealing with adults that are 1, 2, 3, 4 years old. And even the 1, 2, 3, or 4 year old baby will mess its pants once in a while. And the older people have to clean it up. And I don't mean to tell you that this is the way that it's hewn in stone that you have to go. And they tell me that I'm denying them the right to tell it like it is. No one's denying you or people in my group anything. You can say what you want to do, and you can do what you want to do. But when I came along, if I got out of line a little bit, my sponsor, and I was given the sponsor the first night that I attended an AA meeting, told me what to do, and he didn't mince any words about it. By George, you can't do this. And you come back, well, there's no must in AA. There ain't no must, but there's a hell of a lot of you'd betters. And the you'd betters is what they used to tell me. Nobody's denying anybody anything. We do in some areas ask that you not use bodily function words to make a point. That's unnecessary to me. Old George had the right idea. George from Raleigh here. George used to say, if you can't eat it, don't say it. And I've always remembered that. Lack of the use of profanity never offended anybody. And I'm not so goody-goody, but I do think we can go from the, can't go from the profane to a story of what God has done for me with the same degree of sincerity. It just has no place. Nowhere in the big book does it ever mention vulgarity or profanity as a means of carrying the message. And as I said, I don't mean to preach, but let's be honest. And clean up the wreckage of the past and walk in the light of the giver of all good gifts, powered by choose to call God. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I feel that we're truly blessed here in this area that we have a lot of long-term sobriety. I'd like for those of you that have been sober over 30 years to stand. And I see several of you out there that I know have more than 30 years. Thank you. Let me see those who've been sober 25 and more. Stand up. Between 20 and 25. I'll let you babies sit down. Dot and I were out at the Kentucky State Convention a year or so ago. Maybe it was last year. And they had everybody stand. And when it got to those over 25 years, it wasn't this many. And there was 2,200 people in that auditorium. So there is a lot of sobriety in this area, in this group. And it just thrills me to see all the sobriety. It does me good. We ran over. I was going to have a few questions. Anybody have a burning desire to ask any one of these panelists anything about AA? Or if you do, just stand up and identify yourself and we'll have the question. Maybe one or two. Well, good. They did a real good job. Let's give them another hand.
If you will, just remain standing and we'll close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
You got coming back.